Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Press and go. Just press and go.
That's our motto.
Life's a show when you just press and go.
No, literally, that's our 2024 motto.
Just press and go.
We don't have time for glue. We need to just press and go.
Stop with the glue. Glue is so 2002.
Wow.
We're talking about impress, press on falsies, and press on manicure. The Impress Press-On Falsies are these lashes that require zero glue. They have a variety of different styles. I personally am a fan of the natural and also the wispies. I like applying a few just to the corner of my eyes. And honestly, this is faster for me than applying mascara. It is so quick. I gotta also tell you the falsies, one thing I forgot to mention, they're the underlash. It's underneath the lash. So they look super, super realistic. No glue, just press and go.
Speaking of press and go, let's talk about the Impress No Glue Manis that I am obsessed with. If you follow me, you know that I am in my press-on era right now because I do not have time to sit in the chair at the salon like many of you for like 2 hours. And that's fine because thanks to Impress, you can have a super fabulous mani in seconds. You don't have to apply any glue. They come in all different styles. And the Impress manicure has a patented super hold adhesive for up to 7 days.
If you want to try the no glue mani or press on falsies from Impress that won't damage your nails or lashes, just go to Impress. That's impressbeauty.com/Los Angeles. And then use our code Los Angeles to check out for 25% off Impress manicure and press on falsies.
Hi, Kirby.
Hi, Sarah.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
Today, we have one of the most renowned celebrity makeup artists in the world, responsible for some of the most beautiful faces in Hollywood, including Charlize Theron, Emilia Clarke, Rooney Mara, and Anne Hathaway. She is also a Chanel celebrity makeup artist, NBD.
We are so thrilled to have her on Los Angeles today. Welcome, Kate Lee.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. I know that you're, like, probably so tired because we have you here day after Oscars.
Truly.
And you were a little bit busy.
Just a little bit.
It was a bit of an Oscar hangover this morning.
Right? Yeah. Well, so Sarah and I both have, you know, a relationship with Kate and...
It sounds like so like serious, like we both.
Well, it should be serious. Thank you very much.
It's longstanding.
It's longstanding. Kate came to Pop Sugar years ago and did makeup on my good friend Sarah Goodwin, who is now in the beauty world as well. And she did a Emma Watson makeup look. Do you remember that?
I do. That is.
And the lip was like gorgeous, this kind of like pinky rouge, and the eye was so beautiful and clean. And Sarah, I even texted her about it recently.
I believe you remember that.
And she was, I mean, I literally just watched the video and I'm like, wow, me as a little infant talking to the camera. But Sarah was like, I still like love that makeup look.
Oh my gosh.
She felt so beautiful.
Well, we were texting, Kirby and me were texting about, it was about your makeup.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, Kate Lee, when she did my makeup, it's still like to this day, like my favorite look ever.
Oh, yeah, like, because
I've never looked better.
But you were also in
Paris. I was with Paris with Kate.
Yes. So
it wasn't a shabby evening, was it?
That's going down our romantic relationship blossomed.
Truly romantic. Love is in the air.
And when we first started the podcast, that was like right when I got back from Paris. So that was like we were talking about all the tips and tricks you taught me. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So katesthebomb.com. We love her.
Yes. And so we have so much to chat with you about, but we want to start from the beginning. I think a lot of people are very familiar with your work, but maybe are not as familiar with your story of how you started. Mm-hmm. So can you walk us through how you got into beauty?
Wow. It's a long time ago. I'm an only child. I come from a tiny village in the north of England, and I spent a lot of time on my own as a kid. And I mean, I was very young when I focused on what I wanted to do, and I took my options at school based upon wanting to be a makeup artist, even though I don't think I really fully understood what that meant at the time. I was very focused on musicians in the 80s, and my dad was a drummer, and so we always had music in our house, and it was the 80s, so things were very flamboyant then, and, you know, we didn't have Instagram, so, you know, we had posters.
Right?
And so I would have, like, pictures of all the, you know, relevant musicians at the time, like Boy George and Toya Wilcox and all these amazing kind of 80s artists on my walls. And that was when I remember focusing very clearly on how something was done and wanting to understand how I could physically do that. Mm-hmm. I don't really know where I plucked it from, because it was so kind of far reaching to where I was born and I grew up. But I was laser focused, and I knew. And so all of my steps at school were taken from that point to, first of all, train to be an esthetician, because I knew that was important. And I think also my family were kind of like, get yourself a trade. Yeah. It was like Billy Elliot, get yourself a trade, Billy. Because they kind of saw me heading for disaster. You know, they were like, we don't need makeup artists in the north of England.
But, yeah, you do.
So I was 11, and that was my laser beam focus.
Wow. Amazing. And then tell us a little bit about the school that you went to for beauty.
So I started out just at my local college, and I did beauty therapy, which sort of incorporated hairdressing, and I trained to be an esthetician. My career advisor, when I told her my lofty goal to become a makeup artist, she advised me that I should start with beauty therapy, because that was something I could study at my local college. And I applied to go there, and I spent 2 years studying to be an esthetician, and I did hairdressing and facials and manicures and pedicures. And at the time, it was the most intensely boring thing to me, because it was the stepping stone to where I wanted to go. But mm-hmm. To this day, I'm still very glad that I studied that, because I understand so much more about skin, and I can, you know, I can tint lashes and brows, and I can do waxing, and I can, you know, there are many things that I can do as a makeup artist that I wouldn't have been able to do had I not studied that. So I'm glad that I did that. And then there was really only one course that I could take that would launch me into this kind of work, and that would involve moving to London. And it was a very prestigious college, and it was quite hard to get into, and there would be, you know, about 3,000 applicants for 30 places. And I went down for my interview at the London College of Fashion, and I was very tenacious. And, you know, they said to me, what are you going to do if you're not successful in your application this year? And I was like, I'll come back next year. And they said, well, what about the year? And I just said, and the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that. And so they thought, oh, we better give this girl a place, because she's never going to leave us alone. And so then I went to the London College of Fashion, which is part of the London Institute, which is in the same group as St. Martin's College of Art, London College of Printing. They have an amazing amount of information available. It's a great school to go to, because I could go to the library at St. Martin's. Mm-hmm. You know, at London College of Fashion, we had every copy of Vogue magazine going back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, so there was just this wealth of knowledge and experience. And, you know, coming from the middle of nowhere and landing in London, that was just like the most amazing thing for me.
And you had like some celebrity classmates, right?
No.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay, we can cut that out.
No. Well,
I mean, you went to school with, you said Stella McCartney was like...
The school was very prestigious. Okay. And they were at St. Martin's, and I was at LCF.
Okay.
But we were all in the same year.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah.
I mean, kinda. Let's count it.
Kind of. I think that counts. We love Stella.
Kind
of. So, first of all, I have to just comment on this. I love beauty therapy.
Yeah.
I love that. Mm-hmm. They definitely don't call it that here, right?
No, I don't think so.
Here you would just say that someone's an esthetician.
Yeah. So, okay, when you're going to practice beauty therapy, is that just specifically aesthetics?
No.
Or does it include
the nails and the...
You know, there's a lot of anatomy, physiology, microbiology mm-hmm. involved in becoming an esthetician, because you obviously have to understand
how skin grows and regenerates. You need to know about hair. You need to know about how a nail grows before you can work on a nail. There are so many elements of it. And plus, I like the term beauty therapy because it is therapy to the person receiving the treatment. And, you know, there is a very specific etiquette attached to that because you don't want your facialist repeating everything you've told them on the bed, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, and that's why I love that term, because we make this joke a lot, but it's like, if you're a makeup artist or a hairstylist or an esthetician or even like a dermatologist, I feel like you have to have this part of your brain that's part therapist as well, because you're hearing a lot of what people are going through and why they're choosing to get this service, or
absolutely
why maybe one of your clients is like, well, I have always been, you know, self-conscious of this because of this. You have to take on a lot, not just painting the canvas and creating the art. It's also taking all of the other aspects of that person along with you.
Well, you're also in very, you can be in quite stressful situations. You know, not that everybody gets stressed out, because they don't, you know, I mean, receiving an Oscar is one of the greatest accolades you can receive, but there's so much that has gone into it up to that point. And, you know, I think training as an esthetician at the beginning definitely helped me, because it's a very personal space to be in with someone. You don't let many people touch your face.
Oh, totally.
And, you know, there you are, first thing in the morning, warts and all.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to be able to trust that person, that you can relax and be yourself, that you can speak freely and not be worried. And I see it as a process of therapy in a way, because you are sort of helping someone to build their persona so they can go out and do their job. And that doesn't really matter if you're an actor, a musician, you know, or just a regular person who wants to feel better about themselves. I think, you know, we are therapists for sure.
100%. All right. So obviously you are a Chanel celebrity makeup artist. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about your relationship with Chanel, how that came to be? Because you've been together almost 15 years
almost
now.
Almost 15. Wow. Like a dinosaur.
No, that's amazing.
A very lucky Chanel dinosaur.
No, but like, honestly, I feel like a lot of partnerships don't last that long at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, you know, why do you love the brand so much? And then kind of how did that relationship develop?
Well, it started almost 15 years ago. And I went for a meeting, and my agent called me and said, we're going to send you for an interview. We're not quite sure who it's for yet, but they want to talk to you about your work and, you know, your work with Keira Knightley. And so just go for the interview and let us know how it goes. So I kind of went for the interview and met a very lovely lady, but who gave me nothing. And I couldn't really understand, you know, what was happening, but she asked me a lot of questions. I answered them. I came home, didn't really think about it again. And I'd almost forgotten about it, but I kind of felt like I'd failed a job interview, because I remember coming out and thinking, well, I screwed that up, you know, because being a freelancer, you're not used to representing yourself that way. So I kind of came away from it and didn't think anything would come of it, not knowing what it was, obviously. A few weeks later, I got a phone call from my agent at the time, and she said, you know the interview you went for? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, that was actually for Chanel. They're looking to start an artist program. And I couldn't really absorb what I was hearing. I was so sort of flabbergasted. And they'd like to meet with you again. And it kind of just went from there. I met Rebecca McCabe, who is the head of Chanel, and we had a cup of tea and a little chat. And then it went from there. And, you know, Chanel were pretty much the first cosmetic company to start an artist program. It was a real visionary move at that point, and they signed five of us, and we began to work closely with the brand. And it always, for me, it focused a lot on awards season. So we're a very, very well-oiled machine at this point. But obviously, it's just such a great honor to be a part of the Chanel family, and for so many years. And, you know, Chanel really pride themselves on building lasting relationships. And luckily, I'm a recipient of that.
Wait, so did your agent not know it was for Chanel?
I don't think that she did.
Okay, because I was like, why wouldn't they tell?
Yeah, no, totally. I think it was like an anonymous thing at the beginning.
It was just like, hey.
Because I think, you know, what they were doing were looking at different artists within the industry, looking at who they were working with. Obviously, Kira was very young within the brand of Chanel at that point, and I was working with her doing all her red carpet work. Mm. And so I must have caught their attention, and similarly with the other makeup artists too. And so, yeah, it was so exciting. And I remember the first week, this huge box arriving. And my roommate at the time is another brilliant makeup artist. Her name's Melanie Inglesis.
Oh, love her. Yeah. I love her.
And she and I lived together in Hollywood at that point. And this box arrived and we sat down in the living room and we unpacked it. And we were just looking at each other like a Chanel bomb had exploded in our house.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I just couldn't believe it.
Hey, we got those deliveries. Yeah.
That's
and
how
we're
I feel
like,
with every
I mean,
Chanel
a box
package.
From Chanel's never a bad thing, is it? And I still get the same kidding? Thrill now whenever yes. anything arrives. I'm kind
never,
of like,
never gets old. I never want to lose the excitement of receiving one of those beautiful yeah. Chanel boxes.
I don't think we ever
I
will.
Save the Christmas cards, first of all. Oh, I same. Have them yeah, like saved in a box. Yes. And I save the packaging.
Ribbons.
Yes,
yep.
the ribbon.
Same.
I'm
have
like,
the
I'm
boxes
never use
stacked
it.
On top
it just,
of each other.
Yeah, I just yeah. have it for decor. Hey, same. You know what? Good for us.
Yeah, totally. But for me too, it was just, it wasn't just the Chanel effect, as I call it. It was the fact that I just had all of this incredible product that I'd worked so hard to be able to afford to buy for so many years. And the value was not lost on me. And, you know, most of my inspiration comes from formulation of a product. And so to just have this banquet of beautiful makeup to work from, it was like a dream come true.
Well, that's, I mean, honestly, I'm glad you bring that up, because I think now, because there are so many different brands, so many different makeup brands, especially, and a PR sends are not one in a million anymore. I mean, I think a lot of people take for granted the amount of product they receive, especially when it comes to like my makeup artist friends. I have several of them and they always are overjoyed when a brand that they have purchased mm-hmm. and saved for their kit mm-hmm. recognizes them
yeah.
enough to send them the product themselves. It's their livelihood. And so I can imagine how thrilled you probably yeah. were to receive the whole lot.
Do you
I
remember
really
like the your first Chanel beauty product that you tried that you like saved your money for or
yes.
like oh, what was it?
I do. It was a found it was years before I could have ever dreamt that I would be the recipient of a Chanel bomb somewhere in Hollywood. It was a foundation. And when I was at college in London, I had to have several part-time jobs to be able to support myself.
Yeah.
And one of them was working for Shuamura back in the day when it first came from Japan to London. I went for a job interview that was for a full-time position, knowing that there was no way I could do a full-time position because I was at college, but I still went anyway because I loved the brand. It was a true artist brand at that point. And I went for the interview with someone who's become a great friend of mine, Millie Kendall from Beauty Mart.
Mm.
And I went for the interview and I went through all of the process, not saying that I couldn't do the full-time job.
Mm.
And then I kind of walked away and hoped they would offer me the job. And then when they did, I was like, there's just one thing, I can only do weekends. And she made a position for me. And I worked at Harvey Nichols in the cosmetic department on the weekends, on and off for about 7 years. Because building a freelance career is no joke.
Totally.
If you don't have anyone to help and support you. And I was a little orphan on my own in London. I didn't have any family or even friends that could help me at that point. So having the support of a great cosmetic brand and lots of faces to practice on, many, many different faces to practice on for so many years, and to be amongst other really talented, great makeup artists and learn different techniques and build my kit, that was a incredible learning opportunity for me. And I still sort of refer back to it now, and I'm still in touch with my friends from Shuamura. I just recently bumped into someone I hadn't seen for 25 years that worked with me at the counter
wow.
when I was in London, and that was
aww.
great.
I love the do it and ask for forgiveness later.
Yeah,
just like, if this is meant for me,
I know,
work out.
Totally.
We would make sort of bets in the morning about, you know, obviously because the the range at Schumer is from white to day glow orange. Mm-hmm. We would make bets with one another how many people could sell yellow eyeshadow that day. And mine would always be yellow eyeshadow, and I would just pump it out.
Ooh.
I would sell it to everyone. They would love it. I would wear it myself. They'd be like, what is that? Why do your eyes look so blue? And yeah, it worked out quite well for me. Princess Diana would kind of like breeze through first thing in the morning.
Oh my God.
We'd let her in through the side door and she'd come in before the store would open.
Oh my God. That is the best story. Yeah. Wow.
It was an amazing
time. Did you
sell
yellow eyeshadow to Princess Diana?
No, she never really stopped at cosmetics. She would just kind of breeze through on her way up, but we would let her in early so that she was so hotly pursued, bless her.
And
I know.
Yeah.
Okay, Sarah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we want to talk about the Oscars and award season in general because congratulations, you survived.
Yeah, truly.
I feel like
it was a shorter season, but still it was a
didn't
crazy.
Feel like that, I'm sure, for Kate.
It was the longest January on record.
I think everybody has made this joke, but truly January was 87 days long. Yeah, it did not end. I'm like, mm-hmm. when we finally got to January 31st, I'm like, mm-hmm. tomorrow is February.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We all made it through.
Who knew that glamour could be so exhausting?
Yeah, totally. And you make it look so effortless.
Totally.
Which is what we want to talk about. So obviously you are just an expert and a pro at creating these super beautiful, glamorous red carpet and award show looks. But they definitely are looks that you can like, that inspire us in our daily lives and like maybe what we would like to aspire to look like. Totally. As normals and non-celebrities.
Plebeians.
I would like to be a Charlize Theron plebeian. So how can we apply those red carpet looks to our daily lives? Like what advice do you have for us?
Well, the first thing I would say is that the gap's closing because the makeup of yesteryear is not acceptable on red carpet now with everybody being in HD and able to zoom in so close. You know, there's someone on Instagram called Celebs Close Up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no room for error. And that has revolutionized the way that cosmetics are made and the detail that people go into with formulation. And so I feel like that gap has closed between the consumer and the red carpet because there's really no mystery. I mean, ultimately, there is when it comes to people heavily retouching photographs and creating this unrealistic version of beauty, which I have my issues with. But the gap has closed. It's a lot more accessible now. There used to be this preconceived notion that if you were going to stand on a red carpet or if you were going to have your photograph taken, that you needed to wear so much more makeup. And that's just not the case. You know, it really isn't. If my work inspires a trend that happens, then that's only ever good news to me. I certainly don't want it to be so intimidating that someone feels that they can wear it in real life. And I always say that I just hope that someone's looking at my client's beauty rather than their makeup. Mm-hmm. I only ever want to add to what's happening already. And there's definitely a balance between fashion, hair. That's why I think, you know, glam squads and groups kind of tend to come back together again. Like Adir is I call him my hair husband. And I think we have a really free flowing creative dialogue before any award show. We'll look at the dress, we'll look at the person, we'll decide where they're going, we'll think about how long the day is, and we'll decide what we're going to do based on that. I think that's why glam squads tend to stick together, because once you have a formula that works, it definitely helps things move along.
Yeah,
totally.
So would you say then that skincare is more important than ever because you want to have that, you know, beautiful foundation and face as best as possible before you apply the makeup?
Skincare is very important when it comes to makeup application. The correct prep is absolutely priceless. But really, you know, the skin is the mirror of somebody's health, and I can really see the difference in somebody who has rested and prepared for an award ceremony. It's not just about what you put on the skin. It's about, you know, resting, taking care of yourself. People that work out generally have better skin, you know, hydrated. Just wellness, that tends to show in somebody's complexion. And I'm not one to screen that. I would rather just use foundation where we need it. And so if someone's looking healthy and at their best, that's great. If someone's had a very, very stressful time, I have to do my best to bring them back to that place of wellness and health. And I really hope that people are admiring the beauty of the person that I'm working on rather than really seeing the makeup. So, yep, skincare is important. Self-care is more important, I think.
So technically, I want to, like, I was telling Sarah, I'm like, I want to know, like, like, how do I, because I mean, obviously, when you see people on the red carpet, they're just abnormally gorgeous anyways, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they have the cheekbones, they have the lid space, they have, it's their seems job like, to, like, they have everything, yeah. And it's their job, and they spend so much time and money as well, like, making sure that they do look their best, but I love that you talked about that the gap is closing between in real life and red carpet makeup. So what would you say are maybe like three cornerstones of red carpet makeup? Is it only spot treating, like with foundation or concealer where necessary? Because I also think that this kind of ties into this Instagram look that we have. And what we're seeing on Instagram is people literally like pumping four pumps of foundation all over their face. Mm-hmm. And it truly looks like a mask when you see them in real life, maybe on Instagram.
The concealer and then the powder and the contour.
It's a lot. Mm-hmm. And you, I personally don't feel like you need that many steps. I don't use that many steps in my routine typically. So
I think what we have to remember is the art of makeup application on YouTube and Instagram is just that. It's an art. It's made to be seductive for us to watch, to for people to learn a technique per se, but that's where the similarity ends.
Okay.
You know, when you're talking about somebody looking their best on a red carpet, generally speaking, they're not wearing that much makeup. The two are very different crafts.
Yep.
No less skilled.
Yes.
I think it's important that we recognize that a lot of kids are learning this way and that they now have this amazing reference point. You know, and most teenagers do start out heavy-handed. I did.
Same.
Everybody does.
Yeah, oh, my God.
You know, the amount of my friends who will come to me and say, yeah, they'll say, please, can you just have a word with her and tell her? Just not so much eyeliner.
Oh, my
please.
God, the eyeliner. The eyeliner,
like,
Kate.
Around.
Black eyeliner. My
eyeliner
mother.
And mascara.
Bless.
But then I didn't touch my brows, so it was literally just
I was
like,
bald and had a black liner on my eye.
And like super orange foundation.
Oh my God.
You know, and then foundation's usually the next thing. And if, you know, it's not ideal for a young person to look at that and think that that is the way it should be done. Mm-hmm. But as a reference point and as inspiration, then fine. If it helps you to find where you're going, then I don't see that there's any problem with it, but I think what we do as artists who have studied our craft for many, many years, who know the difference between an amazing formulation and something that isn't, it's like you can't give a general tip about how to do foundation, really, because we're all different.
Totally.
And it's, you know, I just recently did a masterclass for Chanel at the Wing specifically to talk about complexion, and I recommended that most people had more than one foundation in different tones.
Totally.
Because we all change color during the year. Maybe you have different tones to your complexion now. You know, I think it's unrealistically to canvas everybody and say, this is your shade, this is your shade. That's what's so wonderful about having, you know, such a diverse range of shades. We have 33 shades in our L'Etain Ultra Tenue. Yeah. And that foundation is amazing for everyone because it's actually strong enough to be a concealer. So you're not getting into this situation whereby you have one product that you can only use in one specific way. I think people have become a little bit afraid of going to the counter. And I can relate to that. I mean, I literally just went into Selfridges in London and drew a breath.
Yeah.
When someone came at me asking me if I needed help, you know, it's
totally.
But what we have to remember is even if that person at the counter doesn't look like you want to look, they love makeup. Mm-hmm. They've spent years working with it. They can help you to find something that would work. And there's never better time spent in choosing foundation. And, you know, concealer, that's another whole minefield because people will buy a concealer and they'll think, oh, this is a concealer. So I use this under my eyes. I use this for a blemish. I use this to lighten a certain area. I use this under my brow. there are so many different formulations of concealer now. It's like, think about where that concealer is supposed to go. Mm-hmm. Make your own rules, but there are definitely tips you can take from the people at the counter that will help you to choose the right product for you. So, I mean, yes, a lot of people are trying to link sell you a bunch of stuff that you don't need. Mm. Take your time, breathe, take a sample, go outside, look at yourself in daylight. Do it that way. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, I think people feel very under pressure in that scenario. But in terms of foundation, that is a huge subject. Mm-hmm. Luckily at Chanel, we have many, many different types of foundation. There's something for everyone.
Okay. I have to touch on that because I'm obsessed with the Water Fresh tint.
Oh, yes. Everybody is.
I haven't.
But it's sold out everywhere. Always. I went to Nordstrom to buy it this weekend. And I was like, I need medium plus because I'm tan right now. And they were like, we literally cannot keep this stuff in stock. Like,
Kobe, have contacts.
I was like, I wish we knew someone because I also have it. I was watching Sindel's getting ready yesterday and she was using it. I was like, oh, I really want it.
She's so good to watch, isn't she? Now that's the kind of beauty tutorial.
Oh my God. Totally.
Yeah, that's what I want to look like all the time.
I like an authentic approach and she's she is extraordinarily beautiful.
Right, but she's very, like you said, realistic about, and she's not layering on like so much makeup.
But the fresh water tint is really quite unlike anything else that's out there.
Well, because I love that the pigment breaks. So sorry, my stomach's growling, guys. I don't know if you guys can hear this. It's like out of control.
Do you want a croissant?
There's some croissants over here I can grab. But I love that when you put it, I actually first heard about it when I went to Violet Grey and I was with my makeup artist friend. She's like, have you tried this? I'm like, no. And she was like, it's lightweight. I'm like, oh, it's probably not going to be for me. She's like, get over here.
No, you need to try it.
She did my face with it. And I'm like, I look like a sun-kissed baby's bottom. Like literally it was just like making my skin looked like the best version of myself. And they didn't even have it in stock at Violet Grey. Like they had the samples, but they like didn't have it because it people are going nuts quickly. Over it.
Oh my gosh.
It's more like skincare. The first time I saw the foundation, we were shooting it for something. And one of the girls in the press office said to me, try it with a brush. You have to use a brush because that's the key to how this product works. Mm-hmm. And at first when I tried it, I thought, I don't know if people are going to get this because it's quite technical in the sense that you have to like use that brush to break open the pigment to get both the hydrating and the pigment properties of the product.
Yep.
I wasn't sure that people would get it or understand it because, you know, a lot of people like to put foundation in their hands and put it on. You know, everyone's got a different technique. I was worried about people using sponges and it absorbing the sponge.
Yeah. You can't use a sponge with it. I mean, it would just absorb too much of the pigment.
It just goes to show the value of trying something and having someone who knows about it show you how to use it. That definitely makes a difference.
Well, I'll tell you, the Nordstrom at Westfield Century City, they're on it. Like, I mean, I went to go get color match to see, well, before I knew they were sold out of it. And they were like, I was like, what shade do you think I would be? And they were like, let's try medium plus. And so they did it like from here, like I'm pointing, but you guys obviously can't see it. From like my lower face down onto my neck because they wanted to match my neck because I have a spray tan right now. Mm-hmm. And they were like, if this is the tan you typically use, medium plus, but you have to use the brush. And they like demonstrated it on my hand. Obviously I'm like, trust me, I know how to use this properly. But if you guys are in the market, I mean, if you can find it, get it.
Tell us. Let us know.
It is the magical unicorn of Chanel foundation currently, but there are so many other great formulations as well that are just as easy to use and have different properties and give a different effect.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. I love what you said about, you know, not wanting to give like one straight tip about foundation because obviously it depends too. Like if somebody at home is breaking out or has like hyperpigmentation, it's going to be different than obviously somebody that has perfect skin. Mm-hmm. So I love that tip. But I want to know personally, what is in your kit always?
Non-negotiables.
Like you will not travel or do anybody without having these things in your kit.
Well, just recently I had a little shift in that department because obviously I've been with Chanel for such a long time. I have used their Hydra Beauty range since I joined the brand years and years and years and years ago. they've always made a beautiful serum that I would use before makeup, because like we were saying, you know, skincare is important to makeup. Prep of the skin is very important. You need very, very clean skin, but you also need hydrated skin, and you don't want a lot of oil on the skin, because otherwise you'll find that anything you're applying is just kind of sliding around. So I like to get my moisture really from more serum textured hydrating products, and I used the Hydra Beauty Serum for years and years and years. And we recently just brought out another product called Camellia Cream, which is ultimately a serum texture, but it is a cream, and it has a slight luminosity to it. So it kind of ticks all the boxes in terms of skin prep for me. It doesn't leave any residue on the skin, but then it does kind of give you this luminous effect. And everyone I touch with it, kind of, they smell the camellia oil and they're like, wow, what is this? Mm-hmm. So that's become my new favorite.
I was like guessing you might say that before we started interviewing you.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah, it's mad.
It's okay. Such a good one.
Yeah.
Is that it? Anything else?
And a staple in my kit is our Vitalumia Aqua Foundation, because it's really just like your skin.
Yeah.
It's your skin in a bottle. But like I was saying, I like to have two shades of foundation for most people. If you're lucky enough that you can find one that works for you, it's just the best product. So easy to use, light, luminous, still got really great coverage. Doesn't really need to be powdered unless you're excessively oily.
Love that.
It works well on dry skin. If you have dry skin and you suffer from, you know, perhaps little areas of dryness, it's not going to kind of flake and stick to that. It's just your skin, but better. So that's kind of something. They've also got a really good shade range. So I know if I carry that one range in my kit, I'm covered for everybody.
Yeah.
And if I need to layer it, build up a little bit more coverage, I can also do that. Obviously, I'm lucky because I carry most of the ranges. That and Letaint Ultra Tenue, which is the range I spoke about before, 33 shades. That's fantastic also because it's kind of strong enough to conceal, like you were saying, if someone has melasma or like a little dark patch here and there, some sun damage, you can actually use that foundation kind of spot treat areas like that. Because a lot of the time with concealers, when somebody buys a concealer to hide something on their skin, it will contain a lot more pigment. It will be drier in formulation because it has to stay put. Mm-hmm. And if you have like an active blemish or maybe an area of eczema or perhaps some raised melasma on your skin, you don't really want to go with something that's super dry, because if you do that, then the texture is very, very different to the rest of your complexion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I treat so many things within the complexion as skin. I treat highlighting as complexion. I treat tanning as complexion. I treat sculpting as complexion. A lot of the time I'll apply a highlighter before I'll start working with foundation.
Mm.
Because the truth of the matter is, you don't need to put a layer of foundation and then put a layer of highlighter above it. You can start by highlighting the areas and then work around it, because then what you're having is the most taut, naked area of your face looking the most dewy and hydrated and realistic.
Yeah.
You can you know, get away with using more foundation around the jaw and kind of like further down in the face. But I think the area around your eyes and your cheekbones, you got to go as bare as you can.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Especially if you're being photographed or even in real life. I mean, like, I think so many people listening to this podcast, that's one thing they struggle with is the under eye. Getting the creases or feeling like it's either they can't cover the dark circles or they've covered them to the point where it's just layer after layer,
or they're just using the wrong product.
Oh, really? Do you think?
Yeah, because I think sometimes people look at concealer as though, you know, one size fits all. Like, the concealer you use under your eye should be an under eye concealer.
Interesting.
Very much so, because, you know, it's formulated to sit, to not crease, to cancel out any blue, any green, any, you know, darker shades that you might have underneath your eye. It might not necessarily be a perfect match to your skin tone, because you are trying to, you know, color block
color
the blue or the gray. In, you know, it's the color circle.
Totally.
So I think sometimes there's a lot of confusion there. People use a very heavy concealer under the eye where they really don't need to. A great tip, though, is if you are someone who's either suffering from an oily eyelid or perhaps you know, just because anatomically the shape of your eye, your eyeball is round, like we do get a crease underneath there. It would be like kind of strange because that skin moves all the time. Yeah. We're constantly blinking. We're tearing. You know, we're walking into environments where maybe there is smoke, you know, like your eyes are moving all the time to protect themselves. It's going to move.
Yeah.
Makeup requires maintenance. A great tip is using an oil blotting sheet. When you've applied your concealer first thing in the morning, if you use your oil blotting sheet, just a touch underneath the eye, what that does is it pulls out any extra hydration that maybe you don't need in that crease in the eye. Mm-hmm. And it leaves the pigment behind. Mm-hmm. So then you're kind of removing the offending element that makes the concealer move. You're also helping to stop your mascara print down on the bottom of your eye.
Okay, great.
Because the oil under the eye sometimes dislodges the mascara. I mean, that's, I feel like that's the number one thing that people say to me.
So many people ask about this, about the transfer. They're like, I put on my mascara and then halfway through the day, it's underneath my eye or on top of my eyelid. How do I fix that?
I mean, some people do need to use a little bit of powder under there just because it depends on how much skin, you know, how much oil your skin produces. But I much prefer the idea of removing excess oil than the baking approach that we see sometimes that people do. Mm-hmm. No judgment, whatever works for you. But we don't want to see too much makeup under the eye.
No. Mm-hmm.
The idea is that you're concealing something that you don't want to see, not that you're adding something that you also don't want to see.
Yeah, right. True, you know? True.
So you mentioned makeup is meant to be maintained, like maintenance.
Yeah.
So when you say that, I love that, first of all, because I think so many people always are trying to find like this 24-hour long-lasting foundation and lipstick, and then they're, you know, putting on the layers and layers of makeup to ensure, quote unquote.
For the record, I don't want a 24-hour lipstick.
And
I don't.
Like, yeah, because like what's in it that's going to... That is, you know, making it last.
I don't
want to
look like
long.
The upside down from Stranger Things all over my lips because there's so much alcohol in it that it's like my lips are being peeled off layer by layer.
Right.
I don't want that.
Right.
Fam.
And so, yeah. Are you not a believer in those products? And
I think my focus always comes from skin, having had that as my foundation of my career. Mm-hmm. I don't want anything on my skin for 24 hours. Nothing.
Yeah.
And when I go to bed, I want clean skin. And when I wake up, I want clean skin. I'm asked quite often, you know, what's a hack? How do we make this last? And, you know, in my career as a makeup artist, being known for red carpet work, I do have to make makeup last. But the truth of the matter is, if you really want your makeup to look good, you need to maintain it. You need to take everything that you need to maintain it. My girls have a perfect little touch-up kit that I make for them. Actually, Chanel made one this season, which they distributed to everybody. It was inspired by my little makeup kit that I gave to everybody.
What's in it? What's in it?
Go. Okay, so it's a tiny little clear pouch, a miniature powder puff with just enough colorless powder on there in case they need to remove some shine. Maybe there'll be a couple of little lens pots in there with some anti-shine because you might not want to use powder. Some lip balm, you know, if you can't carry the whole lipstick, which let's face it, most people can't because they have these tiny little clutches, there'll be another little lens pot with the lip color in there, a lip brush if they can carry it, a little tiny makeup mirror with a magnifying side and a regular side, and maybe just like some tissues, you know, an antibacterial hand wipe, a couple of Q-tips. You can make that fit into a tiny little space as big as an iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's what I give to my girls. They know what they need to do if they want their makeup to look good. And it doesn't involve being out all night and not doing anything to maintain it. It took an hour and a half for me to do that application. The basis is there, but you're still going to have to add to it. If you want, you know, your cheekbones to still look dewy at 11 o'clock when you're bowling into the Vanity Fair party, you might have needed to stop and look in the mirror at some point. Like, you know, you're eating, you're talking, your mouth's moving, your eyes are moving, everything's moving. It's skin, it's alive, it's healthy. It's, you know, it's changing all the time. You're walking into different environments, and so you do need to maintain it. So I wouldn't say that I'm against long wear products, because they definitely have their place in real life. Mm-hmm. And my client, Taylor Russell, who I worked with yesterday, she actually taught me something great with a Stay Put eyeliner, one of these eyeliners that are supposed to last for 24 hours. And she paints freckles on, she actually did it to me, which it was the funniest thing ever. I look like Pippi Longstocking. She paints the freckles onto her face and she leaves them to bake. And then like an hour later, she'll just use a blotting paper and blot them off. And then they're kind of permanent enough on her face.
It's like a...
That they stay.
Yeah, it's like almost like a stain effect. I love that.
It's like the 24-hour eyeliner that you buy at the Korean Beauty Supply, though it's amazing and won't move. But it's like the perfect... She has the perfect color and it's like a little freckle stick almost. It was amazing.
I love that.
I'm always learning.
I love that. Okay, so... Obviously, Chanel Prestige.
Obvs.
What do you think, for people at home listening, is worth splurging on versus saving on? Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of people might not have the budget to go full Chanel in one fell swoop. So if they're going to invest in something as a makeup artist, what do you think that should be? And then what products do you think that they could save their money on?
So I think I didn't get to it earlier. The first piece of Chanel that I bought was a foundation. And I probably was in my 20s. And I remember spending the time, because I was interested in makeup, knowing it was the best I could get, and spending the time at the counter and thinking very carefully about investing in my first foundation from them. Always foundation. Always foundation. No matter what texture you buy, no matter what kind of coverage you prefer, I think spending the time and investing in a good foundation is never going to do you wrong, because if you truly get one that works very well for you, it can be used in so many different ways. You can mix it with a moisturizer, use it in a more luminous light way. You can, you know, use it directly in the formulation as it's intended to be, to get more coverage. If you focus on finding one that really works for your skin texture and really is a very good color match, that's the best investment you can make just day to day, regardless of whether you're going to the office or you're going to a premiere. I think like having a great foundation is probably the most important thing. Colors, they come and go. Mm-hmm. There are colors that are very specific, especially within the Chanel range. I mean, if you think back to, you know, when Vamp appeared and then it became Rouge Noir, like that was such a moment, and so many people have copied it and emulated it since. Yeah. There are certain things that are just like the trend color that you want, and it's so important. And it's true, it is much more accessible to maybe just buy one lipstick than to buy the whole range. But I think my advice would be go with the foundation, and that there really is something for everybody there. And then things like mascara, I'm very lucky that I get to use amazing mascaras from many, many different companies. Mm-hmm. And I do think, to a certain extent, you do get what you pay for in a product. However, if you don't want to spend $25 on a mascara and you know that you're going to go through it quite quickly, get down the drugstore.
Yeah.
Buy yourself some Maybelline. Like, buy what you can afford and buy a few of them. Because what I see quite often is when people hide their makeup bags from me, because I'm so fastidious and I'm really like hardcore about washing your brushes.
Oh, yeah.
But when I do go in there, the main thing that I find is lots of very old, high-end mascaras, because people go, oh, that costs $30 and I don't want to throw it away. It's like, it's dry, it's cracking, it's falling under your eye, it's not doing what it was supposed to do anymore. It's time to go in the trash.
Yes.
But the packaging and the color. No, buy a mascara that will be good, as long as you need it to be good, that you won't feel crazy about throwing away.
Yep.
And replace it. You know, buy them in twos. Spend the money that you would spend on a mascara wisely.
Yeah.
Buy two instead of buying one.
That's a great tip.
So smart.
Yeah. But don't buy something you're not going to be upset when you have to get rid of it.
Right.
And we develop an expiration date, right?
I feel like we have a lot of listeners who... Could throw away this.
The mascara, people.
The rule is, if it smells funky, it goes in the trash.
Yeah, totally.
It's your eyes, people. Okay, so
We have a fun little lightning round.
Yes.
Oh,
lightning round. So
I'm nervous. Should I be?
No, I mean, please.
So you can answer these. The goal is as concisely as possible, but like there's no rules. So if you really have thoughts, go into them.
Yeah. I do kind of go around the houses when I answer things sometimes.
No, it's great.
Shall try.
We love it. We love.
Okay. What is the right order to apply makeup products? Or what is the Kate Lee way?
The way I apply makeup is not the same way that people apply makeup day to day. So the two things are very different. I think it depends on what you're doing. I would agree with Priscilla, who you interviewed from Fenty.
Well, listener.
I agree with her in the sense that if you're going to do a deep, smoky eye, especially if it's something you're not super skilled at and you're trying for the first time, eyes first. Because then if it's a powder and it drops down, you can clean up. If you get your eye how you want it to be, then you clean the skin underneath. Then you go in with your foundation and your concealer, any powder you might need. Start from there. Also kind of, if that's the defining feature, let that be the defining feature and then work back from there. Quite often I start with complexion because I like a blank canvas. I like to see what I'm working with first, and then my inspiration comes from there, and then I work from there. I never really have a full idea of what I'm doing when I start. I tend to just kind of feel my way into it. So I don't think that there's a specific order you have to go in.
Okay, just it depends.
That wasn't concise.
So. No. That was great.
Okay, what's your favorite mascara?
I am biased.
Obviously.
Chanel Inimitable Waterproof Mascara.
And I love waterproof because it keeps my lashes curled. FYI.
Absolutely correct.
Thank you.
And your lashes look
And your lashes are monumental.
So, thank you.
Why does makeup pill and how can we avoid it?
Okay, so that comes down to prep. And sometimes when I sit down with my girls, I'll start working and then I'll have to stop. I'll be like, what have you put on your skin? Sometimes sunscreen can pill. It also depends on the combination of things you put together. Sometimes the two formulations can react together and then you can end up with, you know, little bits rolling off the face. And the second that starts happening, I stop in my tracks. I get a new beauty blender. I start again. I'm cleaning the skin. I'm going back to the drawing board. I'm like, what was it that you had on your skin? Oh, it's, you know, it's this sunscreen. I'm like, okay, do you mind if we use mine? Because I know how it reacts. I know how it behaves. It's tried and true with everybody. And so then you don't get the pilling.
What's the sunscreen?
I use our UV Essential. It's very, very light textured and it doesn't leave any residue. And it's SPF 50 and it does the job.
Okay. Next question. I'm going to say this differently than how we have written.
Yeah.
You have messed up your makeup, and not you, but like Sarah, and the people listening.
Yeah.
We've messed up our makeup. Mm-hmm. Do you have to start over?
Yes.
I knew it. 1,000%. I know, because
if you're heading downhill.
Yeah.
Just start again. Because the time you're going to spend, you know, we've all seen those memes where it's like, oh, you started out with a cat eye and then you've ended up with a raccoon.
If you
started going downhill, if that liner has not gone on perfectly the first time, start again.
I have totally tried to do that. Start and then again. This starts turning blue and black because I'm like trying to cover it. And
yeah.
I got to start
And especially
over.
With like powder eyeshadow as well. It's like once it starts flaking and falling down, once you get like this little like bit of snow underneath the eye.
Yeah, it just
it's too late, guys. Yeah. It's too late.
Well, I have had issues with foundation, especially where it just doesn't sit well with my skin. Mm-hmm. Like, it accentuates every pore I have on my face. And I'm like, okay, why is it doing that? Okay. And then I'm like, well, maybe the key's adding more, which is like terrible. But then I start to get this, it looks like a camo effect. I don't know how else to describe it on my temples, where it's like patches. Of the foundation. It's the same shade, but it all looks different shades because I've like...
Everything's been moved around.
Yes, I just keep adding more.
That could be your prep, but that could be in your prep, again, because if you've got too much oil on the skin, then you're just letting that kind of move around.
Totally.
The pigment's moving around on the skin because there's so much slip that it can't adhere to anything.
And I remember one time I specifically was like, I have to remove my entire face of makeup because I had gone over it 3 times and it just didn't
No, start
it
again.
It wasn't sitting properly.
Yeah.
Ugh. So right.
It's the truth we need to hear.
I guess.
Sorry,
I need to
bad
hear
news,
that,
but yeah, but... get that off and start again.
Okay.
Just remove it, people, and just in what? Just use a like a washcloth, makeup wipe.
Depends how badly wrong you've gone. If it's just your, you know, if it's just your foundation, then you're hopefully you're. If you're starting with your foundation, you're going back to the drawing board, and you need to, you know, you need to remove your makeup with something very light, not too oily, because otherwise you're going to get back into the same situation again. It's like, you know, you need a light kind of micellar water type cleanser to get that mm-hmm. off, and then put on the primer, if you use primer, or put on the serum type moisturizer that you know sits well under your foundation. You get your routine as you go along, but certainly if you're heading downhill, you gotta start again.
Okay, fine. Fine.
Sorry, Kobe.
It's okay.
Dark circles?
Dark circles. What about dark circles?
Like, how do we conceal them and hide them?
Well, okay, you kind of touched on this, though. It's the color correction. It's not necessarily piling more product on to hide them. It's the color correcting.
There's a caveat in there that I want to add. I'm not a big fan of layering a color corrector under a concealer. I think what we have to think about when we're color correcting under the eye is we need one product that does both. So it might be that you look at this concealer and you think, well, that doesn't match my skin tone. It's not supposed to match your skin tone. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to sit next to your skin tone and cancel out a blue or cancel out a green. Generally speaking, they're a bit more pinky, they're a bit more orange.
I was going to say that it's like mm-hmm. a peach shade, right?
Yeah. So you have to try it. You have to try it to know whether it works. And that's when it goes back to the counter. And that's when it's like, you just got to relax. Yeah. Know that these people are there to help you. Mm-hmm. And if you need to take it off and put it back on and go outside and look in the daylight and ask your friend, go to another counter, ask someone else.
Trial
take
and
your
error,
time,
guys.
Do it. Yeah, under the eye is something else I will say about under the eye. I see a lot of people do this. They go dot, 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 all the way around the bottom of the eye, the round eye socket.
In like a circular.
And then they kind of wipe it forwards and wipe it back. There's a new concept. We don't need concealer here. We might need a little bit on the outer corner of the eye because sometimes you can get a little red there. Uh-huh. But you don't need it where your left lines are. No one needs to conceal there. If you've picked a foundation that matches your skin properly, you don't have to blanket the skin, and it's the same with concealer. Focus on the valley of the eye, which is generally, you know, just on the inner corners of the eye and where the eye socket ends.
Yeah.
For some people, that's more visible. For other people, they don't have that so much. They might just have, like, the discoloration. But try and focus on the area sort of on the inner part next to your nose. And don't kind of drag that. Just think of, really think, I mean, I think this goes for every type of cosmetic. Think about where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
Think about whether you really need it there. Do you need to draw a big white circle around your eye? Probably not. If it's your jam and that's what you do, then that's great. But like for the most natural looking concealer, you need the right texture, you need the right color. That might take you a few times at the cosmetic store to find the right thing.
And you guys couldn't see Kate, but it was hilarious because she's like touching her face. But like the orbital bone, essentially, right? Like inner corner, I'm doing it too.
Yeah.
Inner corner. And then
either side of the nose on the inner corner of your eye.
Yep.
And then just the valley of the eye. Because if you think about it, your eyeball itself, it's actually really huge.
You'd
be kind of shocked if you actually saw your own eyeball, how large it is. And it sits there in this orbital bone.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what we see. And sometimes people have a more hollow eye socket. And sometimes people have a more flat eye socket.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really like focus on your own particular features and think about where you're putting it.
Okay. What about a shiny face? Like you have used a matte product and you're hoping for the best, or you used like illuminating product, but you have powdered, but you're still shiny. Maybe this goes back to the maintenance part.
Yeah. Or like your tip for carrying, did you say oil bonding?
Yeah. I mean,
oh, no, you also did something in Paris where you used like a primer at the end. to like...
Oh, yeah.
Set my teeth
so out. Shine again, you know, complexion is a minefield because everybody's so different. Sometimes people produce a lot of oil and they just have to maintain. No amount of primer is going to help you in that situation. You only have maintenance. Primer will help to a certain extent, and a lot of these primers now will absorb up to like 10 times their own weight in oil, but that doesn't mean that they're without maintenance. If you are super oily and you have got very visible pores, you are going to have to keep blotting that oil off during the day. I think what people do sometimes is they just keep putting on more powder, more foundation, because they don't want to see the pores and they don't want to see the shine. And I think ultimately it's more about controlling the environment than masking it completely. So blotting papers are amazing. You don't, again, they're not a splurge. You don't have to spend an awful lot of money on blotting papers. You can buy them almost anywhere now, very inexpensive. So you're not going to kind of feel like you can't use a few during the day if you need them. Primers definitely do help absorb oil and they can help to conceal pores. The downside of that is that you do have to be fastidious about removing your makeup because you don't want to clog the pores that are causing you the distress in the first place. Mm-hmm. People think you don't need to hydrate. You do need to hydrate. That's really, really important. Maintenance with shiny faces and oily eyelids, which is something that a lot of people suffer from.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right, last question. How often do you wash your makeup brushes?
Every single time I use them.
But, okay, so...
My personal ones? They probably go for about a week.
Okay, that's more...
Well, my because personal. Obviously she's working on clients. Yeah. Like, she doesn't want to be like, okay...
I'm always washing brushes, so for me to wash my brushes is not really a big deal.
Totally.
Does Chanel have a makeup brush?
We don't. We don't.
We got to put in a request.
I think it's that thing of like maybe people don't think about it too
Where
much.
Where do I file this ticket?
Should we be going to Paris to like formulate this for them?
Beauty blender make a good makeup brush cleaner.
You do like their cleaner? Because I like it. I think it's great.
Yeah.
So what is usually your method?
Each different... I'm such a dork.
No, it's okay.
Please.
You're not a dork at all.
Each different brush has a different technique. So if a brush is made of synthetic fiber, which is generally a brush that I would use with anything that's a cream formulation because it's a lot easier to blend that way, that I will use. It's a solid brush cleanser. And I usually use the solid brush cleanser. I wet the brush. Mm. I put it in the soap. I'll work it in. And I'll leave it to sit for a minute because quite often you need a moment for the oils and the product. You know, you can't throw away your brushes every time you use them, but it's very, very important to clean them. Like, you wouldn't want me to put a brush on your face that had been on somebody else's face.
No. Yeah.
You know, my beauty blenders go through a similar situation. I wash them very thoroughly. I sterilize them. You know, I put them in an autoclave that, you know, there's my esthetician person.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just kind of like you can't just kind of rinse it out under the tap and hope for the best. When you're working with the kind of faces that we work with, it's like they want a new beauty blend that belongs to them.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Has this touched anybody else's face?
I never understand it when I do see kits that are dirty sometimes and it freaks me out because once you've studied, you know, once you've seen that petri dish grow in front of your eyes, you're very cognizant of it. And it's the same with brushes. So the nylon brushes are washed. Mm-hmm. If I'm using like a very small, like an eyeliner brush or an angle eyebrow brush, and I need to quickly clean it, I will use a brush cleaner, like a more astringent brush cleaner in that situation if I need to turn it around quickly. Generally speaking, everything gets washed and then it all gets sterilized.
How do you... Oh, and you sterilize it in...
I have an like autoclave.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, need one of those. No, I want one of those. Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much. This has been such an incredible
episode. It's already
episode.
The end?
I know. I mean, we could keep going, but we don't want to keep... She's busy. And she needs a break.
She needs a nap.
She needs a drink. She needs to, like, go to the mountains.
Yeah.
Go to a cabin. Yeah. I need to do something.
Thank you so much.
Yes, and congratulations on an amazing award season. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on my Instagram. Kate Lee Makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find me through my agency's website at thewallgroup.com.
Beautiful. And then follow along and see your work on We Love Coco. Yes. And Chanel Beauty.
I'm quite often on We Love Coco.
We Love Coco is great.
Oh my God.
I get to do all kinds of fun things for them.
Applause.
Shoot little videos.
They're so good. Pieces.
We need a Los Angeles takeover on We Love Coco. Just putting that into the ether.
That's okay. A really it has to good be like 100 people who have to approve that first, but yeah, let's apply.
Listen, the secret is you put it into the world and it comes back to you.
So. If we've learned anything from Kate.
Yes. Yeah. I just did that. So you're welcome, Sarah. It's happening. guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. We love Kate. We're glad that you guys have been just so lovely and supportive of this podcast. We are online. Obviously, you can find us on Twitter, which Twitter kind of blew up for us over Oscars because we made some content.
Memes that Kirby made.
The memes. The memes happen. So we're Los Angeles Pod on Twitter, Los Angeles Pod on Instagram, and we're on Facebook. Join my favorite thing on Facebook, our Facebook group.
Yeah.
You people know what you're talking about. I truly am amazed that we don't even have to do anything.
We don't even have to
group.
Answer any questions.
Y'all your own little world. We love it. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.